Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. How do you encourage young people to make more healthful decisions when they buy snacks at a corner store? How do you increase access to foods of cultural significance for Baltimore's Latino community? And how do you create a path of upward mobility for Latinos in the food industries? Those are some of the questions Katie Miller is considering as she starts a mission. Katie Miller is one of this year's Open Society Institute Baltimore Community Fellows. She and nine other fellows each will receive $60,000 over the next 18 months to fund a local project. The nonprofit Open Society Institute focuses on the needs of Baltimore's underserved communities, with a particular focus on drug addiction, criminal justice reform, and empowering young people. Katie Miller's project is to establish the Latino Food Alliance. Katie Miller is here with me in the studio. Welcome to On the Record.
Thanks so much.
You are focused on serving the Latino community, but you yourself are not Latina. So where does that interest come from?
It actually started in college. I spent a summer teaching in migrant education, which helps prepare students of migrant laborers for school in the fall. And at the same time, I was also volunteering at a Homeland Security Family Detention Center. And I really saw two very parallel ways we can treat our Latino immigrant communities. One is to participate in processes of welcoming, like the migrant education program in which I was teaching. And then the other is one of, I would argue, disenfranchisement. And I really decided at that point that I'd like to find ways to continue to participate in those processes of welcoming. And I think my OSI fellowship is really a great opportunity to do so.
So you also served in the Peace Corps.
Yes, I did.
Was that after this migrant education that you did?
Yes. When I graduated college, I served in the Peace Corps in Guyana, South America for 2 years.
That's on the Atlantic coast.
Between Suriname and Venezuela.
And what kind of lessons did you take away from that experience?
I think it affirmed for me that one of my core values is really hospitality and just what it means to welcome someone into your community and to be a good neighbor, not because I necessarily regularly exercise those values, but because they were demonstrated to me. And I think I learned that from the women in my community who I refer to as my aunties, just the amount of time I spent with them by the fireside preparing meals, or the fact that there's this Guyanese cultural expectation that you make more food than your family needs because you may have a visitor who you're then expected to feed. So I think that idea of feeding people as a form of welcoming is something that I've really come to embrace.
A big component of your project involves the idea of another value, food justice.
Mm-hmm.
Explain that.
For me, I think food justice is access to foods that are affordable and also culturally relevant and also contribute to the health and well-being of those who are consuming them.
U.S. Census Bureau data for last year showed that 4.8% of Baltimore's population identifies as Hispanic or Latino, and many of them live in the city's southeast neighborhoods. How would you characterize what kind of access they have to food that is fresh and healthy and food which, as you mentioned, is culturally significant?
I think access isn't necessarily the main challenge for our Latino Hispanic community, to be honest. This project actually came out of my master's thesis research, which was on the impact of our Latino immigrant community on the Southeast Baltimore food environment. And what I discovered through that research was that a lot of the members of this community are really great at finding creative ways to access food within the city, whether it's finding rides with friends to grocery stores if they don't own a vehicle themselves, figuring out public transportation, or even visiting multiple stores to be able to access those culturally relevant products that might not all be available in a single place.
Give me an example of a challenge that you've seen people be very creative about addressing.
I interviewed one woman who walks about 2 miles to Highland Town Market because it's where she can find affordable and culturally relevant products. And then she either pays for a taxi or takes the bus home because she can't afford transportation both ways. But she found that shopping at Highland Town Market was far more affordable than shopping within her neighborhood, even though the same products were available, but at a higher cost.
So it's worth it to her to put that time and effort into the trip.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
This is On the Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Katie Miller, one of this year's 10 Open Society Institute's community fellows. Her project is called the Latino Food Alliance. So one of your missions is to engage corner stores, stores either owned by Latinos or who serve primarily Latino customers, and to encourage them to offer healthier choices. How do you plan to make that pitch?
I think there are really two reasons that our corner stores will be highly motivated to try to stock some of these healthier options. First, I'm collaborating with the health department in their Healthy Corner Stores initiative, which provides basic infrastructure, some marketing materials, and sometimes even a small refrigerator for corner stores to be able to stock the healthier options. They also do in-store demos of healthy foods. And then the second reason is that the requirements for accepting SNAP benefits, which
is SNAP is what a lot of people call food stamps, supplemental nutrition
assistance program, I believe. Exactly. So the SNAP requirements are shifting so that in order to accept SNAP, stores will have to stock a higher variety of several categories of healthy foods. And we know that SNAP acceptance is really important within the Baltimore City food retail environment, just because a lot of our residents do make use of that particular program. So in order to be able to maintain their customer base, a lot of these stores will have to make that shift.
When does that take place?
I believe USDA is going to officially publish the guidelines this month, and the Baltimore Food Policy Initiative, I know, is doing a lot of work around how to best inform corner stores about those changes, and I hope to be able to act as a bridge between the Baltimore Food Policy Initiative and their efforts and some of our corner stores that might not be owned by English speakers. So I think language access might be a challenge that I'm particularly well positioned to help address.
So that's part of what you're going to be doing with your project. Another part of the mission, educating young people about making healthier choices and also educating young people about the idea of food justice. You've already been working in this area. Tell us how you're going to push that work forward.
Sure. This is actually another program that our health department has piloted in West Baltimore. It's called the Neighborhood Youth Food Advocates Program. And the goal of the program is really to help youth think more critically about their decisions within the food environment and different influences within the food environment. So, for example, Johns Hopkins Center for a Livable Future has published a lot of maps related to food deserts in the city. And when you look at the maps of food deserts and where different populations are located within the city, you start to see some significant overlap. So helping youth process what it means to be a Black or Latino youth and also live in a food desert, and how that's part of larger issues of justice within the city. So I think it's a really great program, but I also try to recognize that in order to shift our food environment, we not only need to make sure that healthy options are available within corner stores, but we also need to help create a demand for those healthy options. So I think the Healthy Corner Stores part of my program really tries to make sure the supplies are there. And then the Neighborhood Youth Food Advocates Program tries to ensure that there's a customer base to make those purchases.
The demand side mm-hmm. of the equation. And then another aspect of your fellowship, creating a cooperative ownership model for Latinos in the food industry. Describe what that would look like.
Well, just to give a little bit of background, the reason that I think that's a particularly important part of the project is because our Latino immigrants really undergird our food system on a national level. There was just an article in the Times last week about those who are working in agriculture in California who are growing the organic lettuce mixes that we buy at Whole Foods but can't afford to purchase them themselves to feed their families. So I think this is an issue really across the nation, whether you're talking about those growing lettuce in California to the folks who are working in chicken processing plants in the Midwest, and then our Latino immigrant neighbors here in Baltimore who are working in the back of the house in restaurants. While these are great economic opportunities, and I'm certainly thankful for all the job opportunities that do exist in Baltimore, I don't think any of those jobs really provide the kind of upward mobility that allow people to have sustainable livelihoods within the city. So a cooperatively owned food business would really allow someone to have a little more economic viability and stability. And essentially, someone might come into a business as a laborer, but then have the opportunity to have some kind of ownership stake at some point. And I'll be working with CASA to develop that model. We Are CASA is the host organization for my fellowship, which is an immigrant advocacy organization in Maryland, as well as Virginia and Pennsylvania.
I want to make sure I understand. Are you mm-hmm. actually going to set up a store?
I don't know that that's necessarily a feasible outcome in 18 months, but CASA is expanding its employment training within Baltimore City. And this model could then be incorporated into their employment training program so that rather than just being trained to work in a restaurant, people could be trained in terms of how to own and operate their own food business.
And would this be, you just mentioned restaurant, mm-hmm. or also sort of the middleman part of the business, the supply and distribution part of it?
I think that's something that we really have to explore and think about. One of the challenges to owning a grocery type business in the city is that there's a very narrow profit margin. I believe it's 1-3%. So we certainly don't want people to get into a business that's not going to be profitable. But at the same time, we know we need more grocery stores in Baltimore. My goal is to really work with people to identify the kind of food business they would like to own and operate. And I also hope that that desire would intersect with a need within the city, such as a lack of grocery stores.
Tell me more about We Are Casa.
One of the reasons that I really admire We Are Casa is because I think they take a very holistic approach to advocacy surrounding issues that immigrants face. For example, here in Baltimore, they operate an after-school program. Just earlier this week, I was helping some Latino immigrant residents apply for a free health insurance program through Kaiser Permanente. But at the same time, the day after the decision regarding DAPA came out at the Supreme Court, there were folks in Casa t-shirts who were pictured on the front page of the New York Times.
DACA is deferred action, the Obama,
yes, but I
Obama
believe,
program that lets people stay mm-hmm, in the country.
Yeah, but I believe the Supreme Court decision was regarding DAPA, the program for the parents of children who qualify for DACA. So I think CASA really has an understanding that the issues our Latino immigrant neighbors are facing here in Baltimore are not just limited to what's happening in their neighborhood, but are also influenced by federal level policies and decisions. So when I was thinking about an organization to host this type of project, I thought CASA was really ideal because I really appreciate and respect that cross-scalar thinking.
So we've covered quite a few efforts that you're going to be involved in. Have we described the core of your project?
I think we've touched on all three components that are central to my project.
Thank you so much for taking time to tell us about it, and good luck.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Katie Miller is a recipient of a 2016 Open Society Institute Baltimore Community Fellowship. For the next year and a half, she will be working to further her project, the Latino Food Alliance. There are 9 other Open Society Institute fellows this year. Other projects include a free school supply store for teachers and a diaper bank for struggling families. You can find profiles of other OSI fellows at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Have a great day. Tune in tomorrow. Thank you.